anymore. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, in no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth, the second hour. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight.
We're rebroadcasting a program that we did on April 26, 2012. And we interviewed John Stossel. And what we basically interviewed was about that, yes, we can. In other words, individuals can do far more than government can. And this gets back to what Obama said. President Obama said that you didn't do it. The government did it for you. Well, let me say this to President Obama. That little lady that I always use as an example, the little dress shop owner, well, she went out and she bought some dresses and some capital saved from her washateria job for years and started a little dress shop. And finally, she got enough capital together to open a storefront down here in San Antonio. This is an imagined example here. And so she's doing well, and she's down there, and she's selling clothes, and she's making some, and she's got it, you know, some work, farmed out to some other women that want to do some sewing for her. Well, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. And that's what's wrong with this socialist communist idea. You know, it doesn't get things done. I'm sorry. The profit motive is still something that gets people up and moving because it has a selfish interest to satisfy. Yes, greed is a problem. And people can become overly greedy and become just, you know, obsessed with money. But there's nothing wrong with that little lady in San Antonio, that dress shop owner, making a few dollars in profit and taking that profit and supporting her family, her children, maybe her grandchildren if she's old enough to have grandchildren and so forth. This is what people overlook. We've got to continue to support small business in this country. Yes, corporations have done a job on America. They've done a job on the world. They are totally out of control like most large governments. So these large corporations, yes, they're totally out of control. We've got to do something to get them, you know, under control of some kind. But the thing is, they were built in a free market system. So it's very, very difficult to try to rein in corporations. Otherwise, you get back to a planned economy again, see? It's just that the corporations should not have the ability with large contributions and things like that to influence our politics. We should limit our giving from the base, grassroots basis to politicians, and I think we would be a lot better off. The Ukrainian forces destroy Russian convoy. Oh, my gosh. We've got a report here. German security recorded Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And Merkel, she got real mad, about the NSA recording her. Who do they not record? They were caught recording senators' phone calls and so forth and snooping on everybody. This is just getting so out of hand. Oh, Ann Compton retired from ABC News. I think she was a fine lady. Boy, she kept her nose clean. She's led a exemplary life. And Ann Compton, mucho luck to you in the future for whatever enterprise that you're entering into, because we just wish you the most, because you're just a really fine lady. And I know that whatever, you know, you go into next, you're going to be a big success. Ferguson, Missouri, is martial law a legal concept? There are people out there on talk shows now that are debating this. There's very, very strong opinion by some of the leading legal heads in the country that martial law itself, the basic essence of it, is not constitutional. Period. So we have those opinions being bandied about out there, and by gosh, that might be the real truth. Have you ever thought about that out there? You know, in radio land, you know. So wanna thank a group down there, Church on Monday. It plays at give a little plug here. It plays every night here in Austin, Texas, at the Gallery. Okay. Now, the Gallery is right next to the Continental Club on South Congress, and it would be the northwest corner of that building. There's a there's a door there. You open that door and you go straight up the stairwell. On Monday night, there's no cover charge. The band plays Church on Monday from 8:30 to 10. Now, they expect you to tip. There's a tip jar, so put a hefty tip in there instead of a cover charge. Put it in the tip jar. But anyway, 8:30 to 10, I'm going to be down there with my friend David, and he's done some recording of them and so forth, and they're a jazz band supreme. So go down there and pick up on them. Elias is the band leader. We'll have more next week on that. Anyway, this Ferguson thing out in Missouri, right there, it would be a bedroom city of St. Louis. It's interesting from the situation that now the individual that was shot and killed is accused of robbing that store that he was at earlier. They've got some kind of a security stills and shots of him beating up on the store owner. So we've got to get more of that and find out exactly what did go on. Perhaps that policeman was right in trying to arrest him, but to shoot him down when he was unarmed, no, that's going a little far, too far. They could have put an arrest warrant out on him. They could have easily identified who he was. They could have put an arrest warrant out on him later and not had this shoot down, or they could have tasered him or something like that. That's always an alternative in today's world. But the police, they seem to have a little bit itchy fingers, and they send them what they've done with the police forces in this country. They send them to symposiums and conferences and workshops and things like that, and they hype them up. They're saying that they, the public, he's got to be under control, and if they're not under control, then come down with a hard hand. And it just seems like now that is the typical response that most policemen are exerting against people on the street. And when they do that with this young fellow that was shot in Ferguson, boy, I tell you what, you can make mistakes. You pull that trigger. And what if that man, what if it comes out he didn't really rob that store? Okay, what if he did rob the store? There's still not justification for the use of force in that situation. When he was running away, there might have been a shot fired, and then you could always put a warrant out for his arrest and so forth. But it's not warranted, in my opinion. There was no murder at the store. There was an armed robbery. Okay, so you could always call in other policemen. He was on foot. You could call other policemen in, surround the area, and eventually you could have your man without executing him on the street. But that seems to be the case more than before. Is they're just executing these people, these criminals, and he may not be a criminal. So let's don't prejudge, and let's get some more information on Ferguson. Otherwise, these Black Panthers are running in there. They're very extreme. The newer ones are very extreme. And then you've got all the Justice Department and managing this and coming in there with help and so forth. And so it's turned into a raucous type. Now, what they did last night up there was they let the people demonstrate and have their way and have their protest. And they brought in a black dude that was from the state. So he interfaced with them, and they tried to cool down some of the black, group that did some of the most protesting. The gentleman that was killed out there on the street, shot on the street, was black. And we know that many black individuals have been murdered, I would say murdered in some cases, and shot down. And we've had some here in Austin, Texas, in the back of a police car and this and that. How about the gentleman up there? He was black in New York, got choked to death. Yeah, okay, so the blacks out here, they have a legal gripe, and I don't blame them a darn bit. You have these predominantly white police forces, and in that area in particular, you have a community that's perhaps 80% at least of black, the community population is, and so you're going to have confrontations. You're going to have a high crime rate area. The whites get frustrated. The white policemen get frustrated. They get fed up with all this crime out there. They get itchy fingers. They've got this guy that they believe that has pulled a robbery, and he's not armed. They can tell that. He's not firing weapons at him or anything else. So I believe in this particular case, it was premature to pull the trigger on this individual. But what would you do if you were, confronted? Okay, we've got ISIS over there, massacres, 80 in Iraq. Oh, my gosh. And the U.S. is conducting new airstrikes as ISIS kills 90 Yazidis. Those are those religious people, it said, over there in Iraq. So we've got... Now, ISIS still on a bloodthirsty rampage in Iraq. Well, we've got all kinds of border problems still. We can't forget that. We've got illegal immigration being passed through into the country, which is totally wrong, and I think President Obama will eventually find out. Oh, yeah, we've got Al Gore in a lawsuit with Al Jazeera, okay? And he's alleging they haven't paid him. He sold his network for $500 million, $500 million, I think it was. And now there are questions about certain aspects of the deal. And Al Jazeera has not released his balance of his money that's being held in an escrow account. So that's going to prove very, very interesting in the near future. We have also this Ferguson situation. Oh, we get back. Okay, remember the George Zimmerman deal? Well, George Zimmerman now is being stopped for lying to police, like he's protecting. So does he have some kind of a problem? I mean, that Zimmerman now is looking like he's got a real problem of some kind of idea that he's the great policeman and security guard, and he's going to take it on himself to sit out in front of stores that the owners say that he's not really working for them. And I mean, he's taking on a role that probably is not a legitimately hired on role. That's what it looks like to me. So I mean, where do we go with a guy like that, you know? And it's just really, really weird, it begs the question of what is really going on there, you know. We've got stuff coming up. What we've been going to lately on this live program, every Saturday night, we broadcast here from Austin, Texas. We're an air broadcast, 90.1 FM. We've been on the air on November 1st. We will have been on the air about 8 years. Now, last week, on my last week program, I put into there some Ebola, language. And let me explain a little bit more about what was going on when I when I put that up was that last week, a week ago last Wednesday, a friend of mine was telling me about the Ebola River, that Ebola, virus epidemic, and the first outbreak was in a northern part of Congo, and so they named it after, okay, a river up there that was close by, so there was an Ebola River close by, and so they ended up naming it the Ebola name for the outbreak. Well, a week ago last Wednesday, I went in there and looked at the Ebola River reference on Wikipedia, and it had at the bottom a reference to a village where the actual Yambuku was the reference at the bottom of the Ebola River page. This was on Wednesday. And it said in there that the first victim, okay, had received an injection for malaria symptoms at the Yambuku Mission Hospital 5 days earlier, okay? And then on this fifth day, which would be September 5, so on September 1st, he received an injection for malaria symptoms. Then on September 5th, he was in critical condition with profuse bleeding from all orifices, and he died on September 8th. Well, that's what it said on Wednesday. So I go back in there and look at it the next day, 24 hours later. Here's what it said 24 hours later. The first case was the headmaster of the local school, and it said his name again, Lakela. Okay, and he had toured the area of the border with Central African Republic along the Ebola River with small group from the Yambuku Mission or so, and August 26th and so forth. And then it said on August 26th, this changes it up, Mabolo is the first guy. Mabolo fell ill and was initially diagnosed with a relapse of malaria. By September 5th, Mabolo was in critical condition with profuse bleeding from all orifices, and on September 8th, he died. Well, they took out the part in there that said that he had received this injection for malaria injection. And so it made me wonder, what in the heck are they doing here? And are they taking that out, intentionally taking it out, because the malaria injection could have been tied into Ebola? Was the Ebola in the malaria injection or what? It's hard to say. We don't know for sure exactly if it was in there or not, so we can't positively say. These are some of the questions that we need to continually arise and, I mean, to bring up and to keep after it time and time again. We just can't stop asking these hard questions. Will we ever resolve the final question on this Ebola, this question I'm bringing up? There seemed to be a health bulletin that backed up the fact of the Wednesday version that he did receive a malaria injection, because the health bulletin said that very same thing. So, and the health bulletin was in the citation both Wednesday and Thursday, and they hadn't edited that. How can you edit out a bulletin like that, see? So anyway, it's sort of suspicious. It's on the conspiratorial side. We know there's eugenics movements out here. We know the Nazis picked up on the eugenics from America, and they picked up and wedded it along with this Aryan thing of the Superman. Mix a little Nitschke in there, put a little Aryan dash of Aryanism, and then come up here and say, we're going to cleanse the gene pool, and we're going to make it a much, much happier place. Oh, hi, Hitler. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what they're going to do. And they kill millions. And there's disputes about the number that they kill. The Nazis did set up death camps. They did liquidate people. They did work people to death. That is a fact. And so let's just leave it at that. There's all kinds of disputes going on from all kinds of sides. But we know for sure the Nazis did what they did. And they were after some kind of superhuman race or some kind of advanced thing with some kind of thinking about the Aryan thing. Of course, H.G. Wells wrote about it. that could be a very, very anxious type of idea. Look, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the John Stossel, that you'll enjoy that follows. And tune in next week, thesecrettruth.com. Thank you for listening.
We want to welcome, a very warm welcome to John Stossel, author of his latest book, No, They Can't. Welcome to our program, John Stossel.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Boy, I tell you what, I started reading your bios, your backgrounds, and everything else. This has been a long journey, has it not?
I'm old, so yeah, I guess it's been a long journey. But I gotta say, Austin is very nice.
Yes, Austin is a very special place. Are you in Austin right now, or around the area?
I am. I had wonderful volleyball games in Zilker Park, and then at some bar called Aussies. And the river is nice, and this is the last day. You got me on the last day of my 20-day, 30-city book tour. So it ended well.
Boy, that's a whirlwind tour, is it not? How did you come up with this, No, They Can't? Tell our listening audience, how did you do that? Did you think that up, or some of your publishing agents, or what?
I was just reacting to the hysteria of, yes, we can, in the last election. And people's innate assumption that answers come from government. And frankly, we can, if we means individuals, but this crew... And most people think we meant the state, and that's just a hellish idea.
Would you say that you evolved from liberalism to libertarianism? Is that sort of your evolving over the years throughout your education and broadcasting experience and career?
Yeah, I started out as a garden variety liberal, trained at Princeton that central planning would cure poverty and solve all these problems. And I'm not as smart as some of your listeners. It took me too long, maybe 15 years, to get it. I had to watch regulation repeatedly fail to wake up. I mean, I won 19 Emmy Awards criticizing business and calling for more government regulation. And it took 15 years before I saw how the regulation always creates nasty, unexpected side effects and doesn't make things better. But people left alone, which is rarer than ever, create wonderful stuff like better medicines and air conditioning and flush toilets and most of the good stuff we have now.
Yeah, it's that American spirit and entrepreneurship of invention and patenting and so forth, is it not?
It is.
And so... We're sitting here tonight, and have there been any high points on your tour, your book tour so far, or what kind of experiences stand out in your memory so far?
Well, last night I was at an event for CALA, Californians Against Lawsuit Abuse, so it's nice to see a bunch of impressive and young people excited about fighting the trial lawyers. And I guess in Texas you've done that more than most places, but it's only in Texas, as far as I know, that there are a lot of these lawsuit abuse fighting groups, and good for Texas.
Well, that's phenomenally correct on that. And since 9/11, have you seen just a tremendous change in our country since the 9/11 event?
Well, I think it's been gradual. Thomas Jefferson said it's the natural progress of things for government to grow and liberty to yield. But 9/11 is a good example. After the terrorism, I got scared. We all got scared. I assume I got more scared than you because I live in New York. So even I didn't blanch when the government said we have to take over airline security. And you may remember beforehand, it was handled by private contractors, and they were low paid, but they obeyed all the government's rules. Those small knives were legal under the FAA's rules. But the government said, we have to take it over. Tom Daschle said, you can't professionalize if you don't federalize. And the Senate voted 100-0 to create the TSA. So how's
that
going for us? They spent times what the prior screeners spent. And the one city, San Francisco, which has private screeners, does much better. I sent a producer there to interview passengers, and they said, gee, these guys are friendlier, and the lines move more quickly. And the TSA tested them, tried to sneak through contraband, and the San Francisco screeners were much more likely to find it than the government screeners in Los Angeles. So now other cities want to opt out and say, yeah, we want to go back to private screeners. That's what they do in Israel and the rest of Europe, because you can fire a private screener if they suck, but the government never fires itself. But the TSA won't let them, because government wants to hold on to its power.
Well, I tell you what, this government has just gotten unwieldy and large and so forth. And there was a recent article, I think, in that San Francisco airport about the efficiency of that of those private screeners and so forth. Have you had any problem yourself, as well known as you are as a broadcaster, major broadcaster, with any of these in these airports?
Yes, actually. When I flew from Albuquerque to Texas, the TSA tore apart my sign. I'm traveling with this, I'm on a book tour. It's a gimmick. A sign that says, no, they can't. I have this fantasy that your listeners are going to march on the state capitol holding the sign that says, no, they can't.
Yeah, screaming your name, right, John?
And in Albuquerque, the TSA tore it apart. Maybe they were, thinking that in the sign there was some spear or something, but...
You have such a cutting sense of humor at times, too. I think, as bad as it's gotten, you still have to have some levity or we go mad, do we not?
Well, absolutely. Also, I'm easily bored, and I think humor makes the world nicer.
Yeah, it does. Have you visited many universities, campuses, or close by? I guess there's bookstores right on the edge of these campuses. Are they beginning to wake up to some of these things you're saying, the campuses, the students?
It's hard to know. I go to universities, liberal ones. I mean, even at Harvard, 300 people came out, and many called themselves libertarians. University of Texas at Austin hasn't invited me. But, I often speak at colleges. I can't, from my tiny sample, though, judge what the public's or students' mood is or whether it's changing. I don't think I have enough information.
Right. When you travel overseas and look back at America and talk to foreigners and Europeans and so forth, what is their view of what's happening in this country today?
They read the media where we're all bullies and authoritarians. But the average person doesn't know much. People have lives. They can't pay attention. I mean, I go to Hong Kong, or Chile, two countries that were third world and became prosperous in a very short time because they had the ingredients for prosperity, economic freedom, and limited government, rule of law. The government keeps people from stealing from each other and killing each other, so people are willing, and they honor deeds. There's not too corrupt of the judiciary. And so people prosper. Unbelievable.
Right.
So, but when I go there and ask them, why are you prosperous? They don't know. They want government.
We've got to cut away to a break. We'll be right back, John. Thank you very much. We'll continue on this Hong Kong topic. Thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Welcome back to our program, John Stossel.
Thank you.
And this great book, you've written a couple of other books recently, Give Me a Break in 2004 and Miss, Lies and Downright Stupidity in 2007. Did these help you build upon this latest book in several ways or what?
Yes. Also, I've got a staff of six at Fox that every week we have to research a new topic to produce a show, and we keep discovering new examples of how government can't, but individuals can. And my thinking keeps changing, and that I realize how we're fighting people's intuition. I break no they can't down into here's what we're imprinted to believe from living with mommy and daddy who run our lives, and from evolution, where the clan leader needed to tell us when to harvest the fruit, and if you didn't obey the clan leader, often you died and didn't give birth to us. So we're programmed to follow the leader, which works in a clan of 50 or 100 people, but doesn't work in a society of 300 million people or a world of 7 billion. What works there are impersonal market forces, but it's hard for people to understand that. The invisible hand is invisible. And I like the way Friedrich Hayek put it. He called it the spontaneous order. But we don't believe it. If you'd never seen a skating rink and I told you I was going to introduce one and people were going to pay me, I was going to charge them money to strap sharp blades to their feet and zip around on ice, and young and old and skilled and unskilled would do it, and the only rule would be to go counterclockwise, you'd probably say, you got to have skating police or skating stoplights. You wouldn't assume that some spontaneous order would work it out. And that's a problem, and that's the reason we keep turning to government. And as Thomas Jefferson said, government grows, liberty declines.
Yeah, there's this spontaneous order, like a traffic circle and what on a skating rink, and people have a natural tendency to preserve their own, viability and their survival, and they'll act in those, free market ways, will they not?
They will, and the free market adds an extra element of profit, because that's why we have supermarkets, because people are willing to trade goods from all over the world to bring them to you dirt cheap and have the supermarket open 24/7. The aisles are wide. It's clean. You don't even think about it to thank capitalism. You take it for granted that you can go to a foreign country and stick a piece of plastic in the wall and cash will come out. And give the same piece of plastic to a total stranger who doesn't speak English, he'll rent you a car for a week. And when you get home to Austin, Visa or MasterCard will have the accounting correct to the penny. But
well,
the government can't even count votes accurately. And yet we turn to government to fix health care? This is nuts. Give me a break.
God, it's so crazy. Is it going insane on us? Are we insane? Are they insane? Or all of us a little bit wacky? What do you think?
It's just fighting human nature. We're imprinted to trust central planning.
Yeah, there's something about authority, that there's an authority that is respected. The Germans are particularly tuned into authority. I was over there for 3 years, and I found them to be particularly tuned into authority figures and, you know, marching and, uniforms, things like that. What's been your experience along that line?
It's just human nature. I mean, I can't get my brain around how you build a sewage treatment plant myself. We have lives. We can't specialize. It's just natural to want to trust the experts in Austin and Washington to plan things, and harder to accept that profit could be a useful engine of good things. But that's what's given us air conditioning, flush toilets, and computers. It's better than government.
So you're into advocacy, what, journalism? You advocate, and well, people know where you stand, don't they, John?
They do. I think all journalists.
I mean, well, you say it like it is. I mean,
I reveal mine.
What, you reveal your true thoughts, right?
Well, look, but I mean, used to win Emmy Awards for criticizing business. I was stupid. It's time to say that and say free markets have lifted more people out of the mud and misery of stoop labor and poverty than any system ever. Let's stop vilifying it.
Right. One of my friends, Wei Xing Zhang, they nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize 7 times, but he's never won it because he's the leading advocate for freedom and democracy in China, and they don't want him to win it, I don't think.
Okay, I wouldn't.
Were these awards similar? When you won a lot of these awards, you were advocating intervention, advocacy of greater government control, as you went to a more free market stance and view, did those sort of taper off or what?
They stopped altogether, didn't even taper. Yeah, I don't win any awards. The liberal media doesn't give.
John, one thing about you, you're an honest person. You know that?
Follow the party line.
you're an honest person. He said, no, they didn't taper off. They just cut off, right? But that's what makes you, I think, quite a personality on Fox Network, and you tell it like it is. And coming up tomorrow, is that your program going to air tomorrow?
Yes, on the regular Fox Network at 8 and 11 Austin time, I got a show called No, They Can't, But We Can.
All right. Are you going to have different interviews with different people? Well, I guess you shouldn't tell us too much about the program. But, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be interesting. I'd recommend it to anyone that wants to get into this pre-market and see how things really work. You know, profit motivates people and greed is the wheel, does it not?
I couldn't understand you. Profit what?
It greed is the wheel, does it not?
Yes, it makes people try harder. I mean, politicians get elected, you vote for them once every 4 years or 2 years or longer, and the incumbents rig the system so you don't really vote for them very often. But in the private sector, the people making a profit have to serve their customers well every second, or they lose money to the people who serve them better. It's just the incentives are different, and that's why the private sector does everything better. Certain things we need government to do, pollution control rules, defense, but it should be limited. That's the founder's genius, and that's what America did best when we had limited government, government that was less than 5% of GDP. Now it's 40%, and that's ugly.
Right. You started your early career as a researcher at KGW-TV and then later became a consumer reporter. Did you build on this consuming viewpoint then? I mean, you're out there to tell the consumer what the heck's going on. Is sort of that it?
That's it.
You don't pull punches, and you're funny and insightful and cutting, and people react to that, and they like you. You have a natural, nice personality, I believe.
Well, thank you, George. I'm glad I fooled you. I mean, I'm glad you think so.
No, but some of my best interviews are when people, you know, like yourself, you know, we can talk off the cuff. It's like sitting in the living room across the sofa from someone in an easy chair, and you just let it flow, and that's when I've really been able to establish some of my best interviews.
Well, thank
anyway,
you for talking to me, and
thank you very much.
You
know, we've come so close. John Sozel, thank you very much, and you're doing a great job for America. We appreciate your work. Thank you. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. Welcome to our program, Tony Gosling. We welcome you, and we certainly appreciate you getting up so late at night in Bristol, England. Welcome to our program, Tony.
Yeah, my eyelids are getting a bit heavy, George, but on a week where it looks like we've tracked down the Bilderbergers.
Yeah, tell us about that.
The sources I've been putting together various things and also checking out hotels. It is quite a regular thing, of course, in a U.S. election year for the Bilderbergers to meet up in the U.S. So, I mean, that was really the starting point for me, looking at previous places that they've been to in America. And it just so happened that the Westfield Marriott Hotel, Chantilly, Virginia, just across the road from the National Reconnaissance Office, I think, and about a 5-10 minute drive from CIA headquarters at Langley, Virginia, is fully booked for that weekend. So my eyebrows were a little bit raised. That's from the Thursday, I think it's the Thursday the 31st of May, right the way through to the Sunday the 3rd of June. Block bookings. So it looks as if that's where they're going to be meeting this year, George.
Well, I tell you what, they met up there, 4 years ago, I think, and is it the national elections that they're meeting here in the United States for?
I think that that's they do seem to be the people who, I mean, you know, certainly if you take a step back from the whole Bilderberg phenomenon and see it, as I do, as a kind of parallel government, the secret government, of course, what people are going to need to do, these big business people, is to fix up things behind the scenes. So when the public get to vote, they've already decided either who's going to win, or at least they've got their men are the or women are the top two candidates, so that if there is any kind of real runoff between the public, that the Bilderbergers will own both of the racehorses. So I think that's why often when there are big political events, the Bilderbergers like to be meeting up just beforehand in the same kind of territory. It's almost like a dog making its mark on the tree, you know, just sort of saying, well, actually, we're in charge around here.
Right. I mean, and it looks like they can drive them into that underground. If they stay in the same hotel, there was an underground parking lot there that could drive them down with those dark windows on those limousines, and nobody would really know who was there.
Dulles International Airport, I believe.
You know, my feeling this year, Tony, on this Bilderberg meeting is they said there, I think in their releases or something, or you have in your site, that they're going to keep people way, way away. Is that right?
Well, I would imagine so. I'm not so familiar with the territory, although I have had a look at a map of that area. And, of course, Dulles, you know, is very much involved in all this historically. So I think, you know, there's all sorts of kind of, I think, not very subtle symbolism in the choosing of this venue. It's all very, you know, the CIA, Alan Dulles was very much instrumental in setting that up originally. He was also involved in this, what certainly appears to be a kind of Nazi continuity network where we had Operation Paperclip bringing people over. We also had Martin Bormann busy at his desk in South America setting up all these hundreds of corporations, laundering the Nazi loot and making sure that no one would know that these new companies were, the directors were working for the Nazis. And so having it right next to the Dulles Airport, I think is very, you know, it's symbolic really that the Nazi empire didn't entirely crumble. The swastikas came off and it reassembled in a slightly different guise with certainly some of its parts in the United States. I think maybe the strings are being pulled elsewhere, but certainly, you know, there seems to be the CIA and these kind of big organizations seem to be playing a very big part in world affairs, kind of pushing forward this fascist agenda.
Right. As far as the European view of the American elections, particularly the UK, how in general are the Britishers viewing our election process this year?
Well, I think there's certainly different on the TV to what commentators like myself and on our radio show here in Bristol. I mean, I would suggest that we're always a little bit nervous and worried about Republicans. Certainly with McCain last time and the various candidates this time, they seem to be just incredibly gung-ho. And we would generally very much, I think, like to see Democratic candidates, unless, of course, it's someone like Ron Paul, who has a very different character. A Republican character. So I would suggest that you're probably just going to get a rollover and that many people will be thinking, well, at least with Barack Obama, we haven't had any major new wars, so maybe we should stick with this guy.
Right. We broadcast Ron Paul's piece at the university Thursday, and today the Ron Paul radio site was taken down, was hacked.
Oh, right. Well,
they facilitated.
As we know, there are a lot of dirty tricksters out there. And
yeah, I mean, I don't think they want Ron Paul alive.
Two main planks of that. One is our elections, and the other is our free and open press. And the dark side, the dark forces, really don't like either. And I think, you know, you have to just expect nowadays, I'm afraid, that that's what they're going to do. Unfortunately, there's very, very little kind of policing of these kind of things. I mean, here in Britain, we have some real serious problems with our electoral system. Not as bad as yours, I must say, but we have a postal voting system here where there's been a lot of discussion over the last few weeks that there are serious problems with that. And it looks like also there have been prosecutions where there's been abuses of the voting system. But I'm afraid when you start going down the road of electronic voting with these voting machines, this kind of thing, I mean, really, there's no hope, it seems. But
no, those electronic things are no good.
Well, afterwards, we've got at least in our elections, which are just about secret ballot, we have a paper trail that, you know, can be checked afterwards. Right. Each of the voting slips over here has a number printed on it. So, of course, special branch and people like that can come along afterwards and find out who's voted for which of the extreme parties. Like, for example, in Ireland, they used to go and check who voted for Sinn Féin, you know, who were the IRA party. So there isn't, it's not really entirely a secret ballot, but it's as near as damn it. And also, you've got a paper trail, like I say. So, I mean, iffy elections in the States always, and there's always a little bit of skewing, I think, by the power of money. So whoever it is, the Republicans, if it's Republican candidates that Wall Street's backing, they will probably be able to get an extra 15, 20% in the vote through various forms of corruption.
Man, I tell you. Yeah, we went round and round with this electronic voting, where some of the real fraud is committed and misdeeds is that when these secretaries of state, they hire these outside computing firms to tabulate sometimes their voting results, and that's where some of the skullduggery is done by these outside computational, you know, companies that come in and count your votes for you with computers, right?
Well, that's right, and it's almost like they've got all bases covered. You know, they've got the election fixed, and they've also got the candidates fixed. That's the trouble. And that's where I think, you know, Bilderberg is really important for people to understand, and I'm sure many of your listeners do, that these organizations behind the scenes are immensely powerful in actually controlling the destinies of our political parties, because certainly here in Britain, our major political parties, the Liberal Democrats, the Conservatives and Labour, are really not reflecting at all what their membership say. You know, so in the old days, when these parties were young, you would find that in the annual conference, the membership would attend in their droves, and they would have really good long discussions and debates, and then they would vote on policy, and those policies would be adopted by the leadership. Nowadays, the leadership gerrymander in those national conferences, and they just simply do what they want. And when people question that, they say, well, don't you support us? We need absolutely unified support, and we don't like dissent. Well, that's not democracy, as I'm sure you know.
Right. What's happening in Rupert Murdoch's interest there in England, in London?
Well, it's been a fun week. It's been an incredible week, really. We're having both of the Murdochs at the Leveson Inquiry. But I will say, George, that this is not the sort of public inquiry we used to have here in Britain. Back around about 2005, they changed the law on inquiries. And now, instead of having a proper judicial inquiry with witnesses, cross-examination by various counsel, and also criminal charges, basically, if there's any big anomalies, then what would happen would be that the lawyers would, cross-examine.
Okay, we've got to cut away, Tony. We'll be right back on these public inquiries. Let's talk some more about that. Be right back.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "When the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty." Our God-given right to life and liberty, and the right to determine what is best for our lives and our family's health, are in jeopardy. If we the people do not diligently assert these rights, they may be taken away and lost forever. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, and we will not meekly allow ourselves to be led as lambs to the slaughter. Sitting passively by and accepting the chains of slavery that are being placed on America is not an option. Please stand with Utopia Silver in this fight. Utopia Silver carries some of the most effective colloidal silver products on the market and numerous other high-quality health supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A, utopiasilver.com. Or call us today at 1-888-213-4338. 1-888-213-4338.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. Welcome back, Tony Gosling.
Oh, George?
Tell us your story.
Sorry, you're a bit bogged down there in the Murdoch case, but it's really wrecking things here.
Really?
Proving to us beyond any shadow of a doubt that that we've got a real serious problem in our political system. It's actually getting very close, of course, to the Prime Minister himself. I don't actually think, if you want me to ask me, I don't think Cameron is going to be able to stay out another 2 years, stay out his term, because everything is coming very, very close to all this corruption to the door of number 10 Downing Street. And let's not forget, he's in coalition with the Liberal Democrat Party. So if things start getting very hot for Mr. Cameron, who, of course, hired the former editor of the News of the World, Andy Coulson, who's under whose watch all this phone hacking was going on. You know, I think it's quite feasible that this government might fall. We may have an early general election.
Right. You were saying also that the public inquiries now have changed. Do they not have the teeth they used to have, or what?
They don't, no. As I was saying, what you used to have was a proper old public inquiry. We were reminded last time we were chatting, weren't we, about the Titanic. It was 100 years since the Titanic. And in those days, you'd have a proper public inquiry, judicial insight, and it would all be, and people would go to jail who were responsible. What happens now is it's a media circus. They parade in front of the Leveson inquiry. They say, I'm sorry. They shrug their shoulders. And they say, I don't recall, and things like that, and then they go off home. So you've got this kind of culture. It's a bit like Chile, you know, under Pinochet. It's a kind of culture of impunity, where so long as someone can be seen to be on TV saying sorry, they can get away with anything.
Right,
but, you know, really to get back to the Bilderbergers, if that's okay, I mean, I've really been thinking a lot about...
Hey, tell us your site. Just stop a second. Tell us your site, Tony.
Well, that's right. It's bilderberg.org. And, in fact, the website originally, back in 1996, the domain name was bought for me by the sister of one of Henry Kissinger's goddaughters, would you believe? And Kissinger used to take her out shopping in Oxford Street with her sister, back in the 1970s, when he was, you know, very much involved in high-level politics, because her father was a lord. But, you know, it's quite ironic that those Kissinger's goddaughters, a few squids from her, they actually bought me that domain name originally. So it's bilderberg.org, and... you know, the idea really being, at the time, there was absolutely nothing on the internet which made any sense about the Bilderbergers much, and so I thought, well, let's try and do a proper journalistic job here. The presentation on there is not as slick as many of the websites, including your own, George, but it's the idea being is that all the basic information about the origins of Bilderberg are there, and the origins are very much in Freemasonry and very much in fascism. I mean, those are the two real main... Libby, you look at who was involved at the very beginning. Those are the types of people, I'm afraid. Ultimately, though, I don't think that they can carry on in the way that they're doing, and I think they've got all sorts of problems. I mean, as we said last time, we've got this problem over in France with Sarkozy. He doesn't look like he's going to win the election, and it looks like this false flag event in Toulouse has completely backfired on the French. So that's a really positive move, that false flag terrorism is now out there in the Western world, maybe not bang in your face in the press, but certainly many people are aware of it, and people on the internet are campaigning against it. And so it's very difficult to pull those kinds of tricks now.
Right, right. You know, you mentioned earlier the National Reconnaissance Office. You know, that's bigger. Well, one of my insiders in Washington told me that's bigger than the CIA. Can you believe that?
I can. I can often believe these things because the whole point is to keep this stuff hidden from the public. You know, we were sold this, certainly when I was growing up, George, that we had to sort of watch out for the Russians, you know, looking at what we were up to and the Chinese. The fact of the matter is, certainly here in Britain, our Secret Service is blown wide open. Everybody knows that if you give a secret to the Brits, it's going to be in the hands of the Chinese within a matter of minutes. So they are hopeless at that sort of thing.
During the Clinton administration, they had agents faxing
problem in the press. They try and keep it away from the domestic press and public.
During Clinton's administration, they had Chinese agents, well, they were American Chinese, faxing stuff directly to China.
In the Falklands War, back in the 1980s, when Britain sent a task force down into the South Atlantic, we begged the French for the codes to stop the Exocet missiles, which are these anti-ship missiles. And the French absolutely point-blank refused, because they said, as soon as we let you have them, the whole of the rest of the world will have them. And, of course, eventually our friends over there in the US lent on the French, and they did give them, and there was a little deal done. But literally within a couple of years, the Chinese had an exact Exocet missile copy. So you can see nobody trusts the Brits anymore, I'm afraid. And, you know, I feel a bit ashamed. But, you know, our military intelligence in this country is a total disaster. It seems to be completely infiltrated by outside powers and also needs a real thorough clean out, or just to be closed down. I think we probably do a better job without the Secret Service. Just let the ordinary, maybe the ordinary police do the job or something.
Now, what about Falklands? Is it oil and gas down there? Is that what the struggle is with Argentina
again? It certainly is. And we've had an organization called Veterans for Peace start up recently here, UK version. And that's one of the things that they've been telling me is that there are actually a lot of people that went down to the Falklands, all the soldiers from the parachute regiment, et cetera, think that it wasn't really worth it just for the oil. I think most of the military are very happy if they feel that their home territory, home turf is under threat. They're happy doing something in those sorts of circumstances. And I think it's a really fantastic development that we've got whole groups now of ex-soldiers here and some of serving soldiers. There was a massive spread in the Daily Mail last weekend by a serving major who was saying that the war in Afghanistan is a complete waste of time and that the bodies that are coming home, the people are dying for nothing. This is actually quite a sea change we're seeing, and there are only a handful of people who are saying that Afghanistan's worthwhile, a few in the media.
Yeah, the public opinion is
sort of paid people.
Yeah, the public opinion is voted down.
But most people can see that the whole thing has got to end quickly, you know, and we need our troops to come back home.
Well, you know, they're going to close it down soon because the public is just not supporting it anymore in this country either.
No, well, that's good to hear. I think also the Bilderbergers got a lot to think about, talk about. They're definitely going to be looking at these big strategic kind of, you know, we've had this thing recently from the European Union. We've got, and this is why I talk about fascism, and I really do mean that, is that we've got this woman called Baroness Ashton going around the world now. She's the foreign minister for the whole of Europe, apparently, even though no one's ever elected her, making deals about to do with sanctions on Iran, sanctions on Burma. She's just lifted sanctions on Burma. How on earth you can have an unelected person who used to, by the way, be the treasurer of the campaign for nuclear disarmament, how you can have somebody like her making these massive decisions? This, to me, is fascism. She's been appointed. She's no one has ever elected this woman. And that's what I mean when I say that the big business, I mean, the way Europe essentially works is you've got a European Parliament which can block sometimes can block new laws, but the people who are drawing up all these laws are the European Roundtable of Industrialists. That's exactly the kind of cartels that we saw in Nazi Germany, you know, who were donating to the Nazi Party. So this is the problem, but the nice thing is, and the fantastic thing as far as I can see, is that a lot of the military in this part of the world are waking up to this stuff, and they're saying, no, we're not having it. And certainly, you know, there's always this thing where if there's a conflict, you'll see the soldier, the cheeky soldier on live TV will step forward and say, don't believe anything you see on television. And we've had that in a few of our conflicts over here, particularly I remember seeing that on the TV when we invaded Iraq. There's a massive sentiment out there amongst the forces that they are lions led by donkeys, rather like we were talking about last time, George, about Arnhem and Operation Market Garden, where the soldiers are very good at doing their jobs, but actually they have very little confidence in the leadership. And what's happening is that is slowly over the last 10 years building up and up and up through the ranks. I just don't think that the Afghanistan thing is really going to carry on anywhere near as long as the politicians think it is, as the morale starts fracturing. And this is another angle to this, is maybe that's the whole point. Maybe foreign power is trying to destroy the morale of our armed forces, and I want to know who that foreign power is and what's done about it. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are about that, George.
Yeah, I agree with you. We've got to get off the air here in about 15, 20 seconds. But thank you very much, Tony. Gosling.
Thank you, George. All the
best. Bristol. Thank you. We'll have you back again. Appreciate it, man. Okay, Osman, you're doing it good again. We thank you for being with us, and we wish you all the luck in your new job, so forth. And you really did do us a fine job. And Charlotte, she was on the air, she'd be saying the same thing.